Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only weekly radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, sales, and customer relations. Nationwide, advertisers spend more than $300 billion per year. How are you planning to spend your advertising dollars? Stay with us for 2 hours of entertaining marketing discussion and our special industry guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Wishing we were outdoors today. Man, it's a beautiful, beautiful day here in the Houston, Texas area. And it's Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Roadshow Media, the Houston Business Journal, Strictly Houston, Strictly Business, and this is a big Radio Midgets production. And here we are.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Hey.
We've got Bruce DeMont with us today. This love to be able to share pictures on the radio, but we can't do that, obviously.
Sure you can.
We can talk about them. How does that sound? The museum, it's called museum.tv. Bruce DeMont is our special guest. He is founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications out of Chicago, Illinois. He'll be on with us in a little while.
If you're from Chicago or if you've visited Chicago for any period of time, you know Bruce DeMont. He is a big radio TV guy there.
Yeah, and we'll do a little bit more on his bio here in just a minute.
But, yeah. Hey, Ray, I don't know if you heard about this, but Grey Goose Vodka, the third best-selling vodka import, recently began running commercials on the Golf Channel. So there you go. You've got two of your favorite subjects, golf
Grey
and vodka.
Golf and Grey Goose,
right.
Absolutely.
They apparently created some 15-second spots by DeVito Verdi out of New York, and they show a bartender telling the camera that Grey Goose is rated the best-tasting vodka in the world. And as part of their deal, which I found this interesting, right, mm-hmm. part of the deal was with the Golf Channel and Grey Goose to also extend their brand through a golf talk show called the Grey Goose 19th Hole, which airs on the Golf Channel, of course. And I thought, you know, you're a golfer. I don't know. Is it just me, or why wouldn't they have named that Get Goosed on the 19th hole?
Get Goosed on the 19th.
I mean, then it ties in with what you get when you do.
Get gray.
Yeah. Anyway, do you watch the
Golf Channel is good. Yeah, Golf Channel is in a growing stage right now. It's mm-hmm. kind of trying to learn what it does best and how to do it a little bit better.
It's fairly new, isn't it?
It's relatively new. Yeah. Actually, it's an offshoot of, there was a golf radio a long time ago.
About a challenge on the radio, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. They actually appear at some tournaments, too, where you can actually pick up a little headset. They transmit a low-power transmitter, and you can listen to the play-by-play. But the Golf Channel is a cool channel. They're located in Florida in the Golf Villages at, I think it's at Disney World or something.
That's where
like
they originate
that.
Out of?
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool deal. Good deal. And here's another one. You gave this one to me. This is kind of cool. HGTV.
Your favorite, another favorite of yours.
And let me tell you something. I'm in the middle of putting up a garage door opener, by the way. This is not a home handyman show, but I got to tell you something. Get somebody to do it for you, okay?
My policy. That's always my policy.
And you know the measure twice, cut once thing?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You still screw it up. HGTV is giving Synergy a new home and garden television set. It's received 28.1 million entries into its franchise dream home giveaway promotion. I am told, by the way, that I am entered in that.
Are you?
Yeah, we have relatives that have entered us, apparently.
What's the prize?
You get a home. You get a home. The entries, 95% of which were submitted online at HGTV. Interesting. 95% of those were submitted online.
A great idea.
What does that say? So HGTV has done this for years and years and years. It's the $1 million prize package features a custom-built, fully furnished designer home near Mexico Beach, Florida. I don't know where Mexico Beach, Florida is. Probably around the Destin area, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And a 2003 GMC Envoy XL, good car. The giveaway was cross-promoted through the network's programming and online at HGTV.com. They always do a good job with that, and it's always a cool contest.
You know, a lot of the networks are figuring out how to drive traffic to their website, and I think there's a very good example with all those hits on their website. Did you mention the number? In January, I think they quoted some million and some odd hits during the month of January. Do you see that?
Let's see. Yeah, 11.2 million entries garnered in 2002.
Yeah.
But the fact of the online registration is incredible.
It's really a smart idea. And, you know, I guess they don't mention this. Is it a double wide or a real home? No, it's a real home.
Yeah, they take the wheels off and everything. It's great.
Have you seen the promos? You watch HGTV. Have you seen those promos?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Absolutely.
And who entered you, by the way?
My sister-in-law.
Really?
Yeah.
So if you
bless
win
her heart.
If you win the house, it's like damn it, Dad. I know you won, but I entered you, and then you got a lawsuit on your hands and all that.
No, no, no. She'd give it to me. That's fine.
Now, speaking of lawsuits, I don't know if you came across this earlier in the week, and this will be 3 weeks in a row we've used the word Howard Stern on our show, and I'm not a big promoter of his. I think.
Don't think we've violated anything by the FCC. I think we're okay on that.
Right, and I don't want to give any impressions here, but shock jock Howard Stern is suing ABC and the producers of the reality series Are You Hot, claiming the show is based on his ideas. Interestingly, in this lawsuit that was just filed Thursday in Superior Court, Stern accuses the network of copying the unique aspects of a Stern radio segment in which he, members of his crew and guests, evaluate the bodies of an in-studio contestant. Some of the alleged similarities include blunt criticism of contestants and the user of a laser pointer to highlight areas of the contestant's body. If you've seen the program on ABC, you know this.
Right.
And what's interesting, and this is kind of the weird angle, I thought, is this just another lawsuit and somebody that's already making millions just needing to make more? But here's an interesting angle here, Ray. Are You Hot features contestants in various stages of dress posing in front of three judges, but the interesting part here is the show is produced by Scott Enzinger, who is a former executive producer of Stern's E's cable show, and the sidekick, Jackie Martlin, is also listed as a consultant for the show. So, you know, maybe there's some truth to this. I mean, the guy left the E! Channel to produce this for ABC and used to produce Stern Show.
Wow.
Maybe there's some tie in there. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, you never know.
Stern is seeking $100 million in damages.
No kidding. Well, poor guy needs some money.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it?
That show, we'll ask Bruce about that, but I'm sure that show is not part of the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Actually, it is.
Or maybe it is.
They have a special alley. They have an alley wing back there for
basement.
The gutter broadcast. Anyway.
Hey, there's something good. You know, I'm going to hold this thought here for just a minute. We're going to bring Bruce on in just a moment. But let's go ahead. We've got good coming up this week as far as what we do is we try to give you a good example or a bad example, not to trash the product or the advertiser or the agency, but just to let you know that you can do some good things and some bad things.
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
And what do you got this week?
Well, Home Bank Mortgage Corporation launched a radio and outdoor campaign recently, Ray, and I got to tell you, this is a really good example of great use of media selection. Their objective of the campaign is to hire 400 new employees. So what they did is they've created a outdoor message with using classified newspaper help wanted type ads with the content indicating the kind of people Home Bank is looking to hire. And they use keywords and phrases in the mock ads to include items such as dedication, team players, loyalty, etc. And, of course, their radio campaign is going to follow the same creative line. The campaign is going to launch with 46 boards throughout Georgia, Florida, and North Carolina. But what I found interesting about this is, you know, when it comes to hiring people, if you think about it, you know, the obvious way would be for people to put an ad, a company to put an ad in classified, right?
Right.
The
Wrong.
People you want to hire already have a job.
Mm-hmm.
The people that don't have jobs are reading the classified or disgruntled employees or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So what a great way of looking at outdoor as a medium that can be obtrusive, it can reach vast numbers of people mm-hmm. that are employed going to and from work and getting in their face and saying, hey, you know, we're hiring. And I would imagine you're going to bring aboard candidates for jobs that already have jobs that you reach them during their workday to and from work.
You know, we also have an interesting take on that concept, too, with recruit ads with the gentleman that we know through the industry, John Mitten, who works with in the Houston area and also nationally. And he knows Roger as well,
right.
Roger Dotson, who's
right.
going to be on the show next week. But radio is a powerful way. I mean, we've produced some of the spots for John ourselves for recruitment for radio.
It's the same idea. People going to and from work, people driving throughout the day.
Perfect.
These are the people you want to hire, people that have jobs.
And if you can afford it, what a cool thing to do. Do both.
Exactly.
Do some billboards, do some radio.
Exactly.
Perfect.
And of course, radio and outdoor do support one another because where are you most of the time listening to the radio?
In the car.
And where do you see billboards?
Stuck behind a dump truck.
In your home.
Right.
No, out on the freeway.
Well, unless you live near one, I suppose, and look out your front window.
Yeah, right? In Chicago, you probably
in a van down by the river. That's where it is. Okay, gotcha. Hey, let's take a break here. We're going to take a break. The advertising show. This segment is being brought to you by Charles P. Young. It's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. We stream live on the web at the ad show, advertisingshow.com, and here in Houston on CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650. Bruce Dumont, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, is coming up next.
Here's proof of the amazing sticking power of the new Band-Aid plastic strips with Super Stick. Band-Aid plastic strips stick to you better than any other bandage. Look, no other bandage before Super Stick could lift an egg just by touching it. A Band-Aid plastic strip can. And it stays stuck.
There you go. It's all about advertising. There's a classic Band-Aid spot from television on the advertising show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. At theadvertisingshow.com, we stream it live on in Houston, CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650. Special guest today is Bruce Dumont. Bruce is founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. This is probably a cool thing for not only folks who are in the industry to go see, but a lot of folks who are just in general interested.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm looking here at the website, too, and we've got, you know, the top pick from 60 to 69, The Andy Griffith Show. I'll go for that.
Mm-hmm.
MASH, 1970 to 79. Star Trek, The Next Generation. Absolutely. Bruce might be interested to know that, what was it, Data? Data is from the Houston area.
Data?
Yeah, from Sharpstown.
Oh.
Yeah, the guy that played Data, I forget his name, but it doesn't matter.
Hmm.
Dumont is founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, one of only two broadcast museums in the United States. Museum includes America's only Radio Hall of Fame, which Dumont brought to Chicago in 1991. Dumont began his talk radio career as an original producer of WGN Chicago's extension, 720. That was in 68. That was when you were just a little kid, Brent.
I was in,
right, in diapers. After an unsuccessful run for the state legislature, he returned to WGN in 1970 as producer of The Howard Miller Show, one of Chicago's most controversial radio programs. 73, he left GN to begin his own on-air radio career at WLTD Evanston, Illinois, working on the 1,000-watt blowtorch.
Yeah.
Dumont was able to establish a national reputation due to his investigative interviews and reporting on Watergate, as well as constitutional abuses by the FBI and the CIA. They don't do that in the 70s. His investigative journalistic efforts resulted in a September 74 appearance on the Tom Snyder Show on the NBC television network. In September 78, he moved to BBN television, and this goes on and on and on. This is kind of cool. He took the program from the ratings basement to the top-rated television talk show in Chicago, beating Phil Donahue in his home market. So Bruce, I guess the question would be, why didn't you take over for Phil this time when his show failed?
Yeah.
And welcome to the show, Bruce.
It's nice to be with you.
Our pleasure. Bruce, you mentioned the Ray mentioned Tom Snyder. I guess that was called The Tomorrow Show then.
Yes.
Did Tom require that you smoke too while you were being interviewed?
No, I did not. I was almost coughing during the interview. I remember that well, though.
It's a funny thing. When you see old television programs such as The Tomorrow Show, Tonight Show as well with Johnny Carson, it's very strange to see people smoking while they're hosting
a
program.
Isn't it?
What
it did to those great microphones and all that broadcast equipment is like,
I don't remember this being yellow.
Yeah,
you know, I had the pleasure of looking at a video earlier today, Ray, on the museum, and I got to tell you, very, very impressive, Bruce. For those familiar with the Chicago area, describe where the museum's located.
Well, we are currently located in the Chicago Cultural Center on Michigan Avenue, right at the corner of Michigan and Washington Street, just down the street from the Art Institute. And we will be there through the end of this year because earlier in the week we purchased a brand new building, it isn't a brand new building now, but we will be moving in 2004 to our own home at the corner of State Street and Kinsey, right next to Harry Carey's restaurant.
Wow.
Right next to the House of Blues.
Fabulous.
No kidding.
And the size of this new facility, Bruce?
That will be 50,000 square feet, and currently we're at 13,500.
Wow. I see it's a four-story structure here. Do you occupy all of those floors, Bruce?
Yes, the plan will be to occupy all floors. It's currently a parking lot, and we will maintain a portion of the basement and first floor for parking for visitors.
Hmm.
Cool.
Well, if you have some vacant area and you need to fill it up, Ray and I will send some things up to you. I don't know what you'd be looking for from us, but we can certainly do that.
Well, the next year, anything that's negotiable.
Yeah.
I've got some Enron tapes. Would you like those?
Just as long as you don't have Enron stock.
Yeah.
No.
Actually,
no.
Ray has one of the few suppliers that actually got paid by Enron. So,
yes.
Of course, that was many, many years ago. The for those that would hit the door of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and you mentioned, Ray, by the way, that there's only one of two museums. We were fortunate to have the Museum of Television and Radio out of New York on the show many, many months ago, and it was a great show, and I'm sure this one's going to be good as well, but I frankly am much more impressed with the museum in Chicago than what I saw in New York, because New York's tends to be just more about looking at archived video or film or audio, and yours is so much more than that, Bruce.
It is, and thank you very much for the compliment. Like the Museum of Television and Radio, which, as you know, has a branch in Beverly Hills, so that that is the other entity, although there are three facilities. It's actually two entities insofar as board control is concerned. But what we do is we build on what they have done, and that is we do have a very rich archives, which we make available, even through the Internet, the access to much of what we have. But also when you go there, it's a real live museum. There's exhibits, there's photos, there's text, there's context, there's artifacts, there's a working radio studio, a working television studio, opportunities to try your hand at being a play-by-play sportscaster, a lot of interactivity, and the type of innovative things that the current generation of museum goer is really demanding and wants to tell a story that is both historic and contemporary.
I like the comment here that Paul Harvey makes in the brochure. What Cooperstown is to baseball, Chicago is to broadcasting. This is where Major League Radio began, and I believe that to be true. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and we had a bunch of great personalities in Cleveland head to Chicago. I think at that point in time, maybe it was WLS or WCFL that they were on. I don't know.
Yeah, Jimmy Stagg was, I know, one that came from Cleveland.
Jim Stagg and Jim Runyon. Wasn't he the Chicken Man guy too, or something like that, or was that some?
No, the Chicken Man was someone else, but Jim Runyon was. Jim Runyon and Jim Stagg were also parts of the of WCFL, which was the principal challenger to WLS's rock and roll dominance in the 60s and 70s.
And Jerry G. was there, as I recall.
Yes, he was.
Too.
Jerry G. Bishop in the mornings.
Yeah.
Well, while we're going through memory lane here, Ray, I grew up in the Midwest myself and in a small town in Missouri, and to have a connection with the world was to listen in the evening
Chicago
to
radio,
WLS radio. You're right.
Right.
Larry Lujack, and I'd always hear him do the weather, and they'd say, inside the loop, it's 34 degrees. And I'd think, what is the loop, and where is that?
Yeah.
Anyway,
when WLS radio went rock and roll in May of 1960, it really did revolutionize radio.
Mm-hmm.
And those that were living within the reach of WLS, 50,000 watts booming out of Chicago, it really introduced rock and roll into their lives, because it was several years later before local stations started to catch on to this phenomenon called rock and roll on the radio.
Hey, Bruce, we're going to have to take a break here. We're going to break for news on CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650. We'll be back with Bruce DeMont, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce is in Chicago today, where it's a lot colder than it is in Houston, I'm sure. No doubt about it. Ray Shillins, Brad Forsyth, we stream live online at theadvertisingshow.com. Brand new time. If you tuned in the first hour and you said, Ray and Brad, well, we were en route.
And
1 to 2 is a new time for the show. So we'll be back with more of Bruce DeMont and a bunch more here, too. Stay with us. This segment of The Advertising Show being brought to you by the Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation.
And now it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update for this week heads to Oklahoma City, where the real shame of shame TV was the ratings. Shame Television is now off the air in Oklahoma after the channel aimed at humiliating men who frequented prostitutes, providing free advertising for city streetwalkers, but gaining few viewers. Oklahoma City officials this week pulled the plug on the city-run TV's channel used to show pictures of prostitution customers. They said the channel did not deter prostitution. There were more females than males, and we kept seeing a lot of the same people, said Oklahoma City spokeswoman Marcia Ingersoll. The channel dubbed John TV aired mugshots of women arrested for prostitution and the men who consorted with them. It was launched in 1999 with the intention of frightening people not to engage in prostitution out of the threat that their images may be splattered across the airwaves. The scrolling and repeating mugshots of disheveled streetwalkers actually helped would-be customers identify prostitutes, the spokeswoman says. It was almost a promotional thing for them. It wasn't a deterrent at all. And that, my friends, is our Wacky World of Marketing Minute.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true Wacky World of Marketing.
Back to present ancient Chinese pantomime, just for fun of it, Jello Tonight. Back to present small Chinese type baby waiting for dessert. Chinese mother bling baby Jello, famous Western delicacy.
There you go. That's before Bill Cosby. That's a classic television spot using animation.
And before multicultural marketing, yeah. I might add.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And it is Saturday the 15th. This segment of the Advertising Show is being brought to you by WB 39 TV and our good friends at Roadshow Media. If you're listening online and you haven't had a chance to sample the show prior to this date, you'll notice that there is a new and improved and much stronger signal now. It's the way that Roadshow Media picks it up, packages it, and sends it off to you.
Great partners to have in the streaming business.
Roadshow Media is their name.
And by the way, if you haven't visited our website lately, we have a brand new website up, designer Laura Napoli with Roadshow Media was very much involved in that, as well as their entire creative team over there. And it's a great site, and as they like to say, new and improved, right?
Yeah, and right now, because we're streaming it, the microphone is lit up on the site. That's pretty cool, too. Yeah. Special guest today is Bruce DeMott, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications out of Chicago. Bruce is in Chicago talking to us via phone. And, Bruce, it sure is fun to share some of the memories and some of the things that are going on there. It looks like a really, really cool setup you've got.
Well, we invite you to come visit us. Again, one of the important things that we do in addition to traditional museum things where people can come in and see artifacts and read the history of American radio and television. Our website, as you mentioned, museum.tv, also gives people access to our archives insofar as what we have in the database. We have over 40 hours of streaming video, and we're very aggressively pursuing the use of some of those archives after the acquisition of appropriate rights, to create curriculum and use that material and make it available online through streaming media.
And you encourage teachers as well as just visitors, consumers and alike to use the museum as a study tool, I guess, or
without
teaching
question,
tool.
To any teacher that understands the power and influence of the Internet, the potential of streaming media, we have over, for instance, 3,000 television documentaries, and many of those documentaries are, we have created curriculum that goes along with each of the subjects being World War II and Vietnam and civil rights and performing arts, just to name a few, and we've created curriculum that goes along with it, so teachers can actually use it in the classroom, use it for assignments, for individual study. I mean, it's taking what we have, the analog history that we've amassed in the first 20 years of our existence, and beginning to digitize it and make it available for teachers and scholars and interested people all over the world.
Well, with 350,000 visitors a month tapping into your streaming, you're obviously doing something right there, Bruce. What are some of the older artifacts that you would find at the museum if you were to visit?
Well, earlier this week, on Wednesday of this week, it was the 70th anniversary of FDR's first fireside chat to America following his election to the presidency. We have all of the fireside chats. We have over 50,000 hours of television's golden era, in addition to contemporary radio as well. We have examples of early television back in 1948, Kukla, Fran, and Ali, a variety of shows from the early networks, Captain Video, Roscoe Carnes, Rocky King, things of that nature. So some early Howdy Doody shows. So just a huge collection of memorable material. And also, obviously, since we're talking about the advertising show, we have several thousand television commercials. We have one of the largest, most accessible collection of television and radio commercials in the United States.
Yeah, and do you make those available to the folks visiting the museum as possibly as a memento to purchase?
Yep. Well, the commercially available material, obviously, we make available in our gift shop, the commercial break. But many of them, because of rights issues, are not, you know, are not available for sale. But you can listen to them, you know, in the A.C. Nielsen Jr. Research Center. And there's no charge to come to the museum. It's a free museum. But if you want to utilize the archives, there is a $3 user fee. And everything online is available without charge.
Yeah. Excuse me. I think that's a very good point. Free of charge to walk through the museum, and then just a nominal $3 fee to access the archives. In 1952, Ray, the first broadcast of the Today Show. And, of course, they have it right there at the museum.
That's cool.
Do you remember seeing that? It's got he's got that big mic around his neck, and it's sticking up from his chest.
You mean Jack Lasculli?
Was that the...
No, it wasn't Jack Lasculli.
That was Dave Garraway. But
right.
Jack Lasculli later used the same microphone. It almost looked like like a necklace around his neck.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It looked like something that you might wear after a neck trauma or something.
You know, a broadcast, be it TV or radio, Bruce, really is pretty much just a slice out of American culture, and it's also functions more as a archive or, you know, kind of a document that you can look back on and get a glimpse into our society. Do you find that people use it in that way at the museum?
Yes, many do. A growing number of people do. Obviously, it's a stroll down memory lane for some, but the great comfort that I get and joy is when I go through the archives and I may see three generations sitting around watching a TV, a grandfather, you know, a child, and the parent of that child, all looking at a show that brings back different memories to two of the generations and introduces the uniqueness of it or the joy that it brought to dad or grandpa by to the younger generation. So those are the things that are important. I know several years ago there was a young man watching a video in the collection. He was there with a young son, and he mentioned to me after asking, you know, what he was looking at, he mentioned that he and his son were going through a divorce, and he didn't quite know how to explain it to his son. So he had gone down there, had checked out a documentary about divorce, and they would watch a few minutes of the documentary and then pause it, and then he would talk with his son about it. So it's a way that people can interact with the content that's on it. You know, as you know, there's so much excitement about the new technology and streaming this and expanding thing, but as you know, content is king, and that's what we think we bring to the table, just this voluminous vault of content and media content, historic radio and television, and making it available to as large an audience as possible, not only those that come and visit us on site, but those that visit us online at museum.tv.
You know, you mentioned the three generations sitting around a monitor looking at an old program. London, our engineer here, she's in her early 20s, and we were talking before we go on the air today about Paul McCartney, and she said, look, I'm not that stupid. I know he was in a band before. I'm very familiar with Wings.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, I wanted to ask you... you triggered a thought there when you were talking. Does the age of a particular program, Bruce, require any particular length of time to have been off the air to be inducted into the museum, or is that very subjective?
No, actually, insofar as the archives are concerned, one is not inducted. Again, we make ongoing assessments each and every day, and the president's press conferences are routinely recorded, obviously, with what's happening in the world today. I mean, we're constantly recording so that we don't miss breaking news. So, you know, we're recording contemporary history as well as, you know, making accessible, you know, material in the past. And we've been recording the 10 o'clock news in Chicago for over 15 years now. So those are the things we do.
You know, you have some programs that today would hardly be considered politically correct. For example, I remember years ago, I guess it was on television, Amos and Andy, which originally started on radio, I guess, huh, Bruce?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are there, we were mentioning before you came on the interview, what do you think of a guy like Howard Stern? Is there a place for a person like that in radio history? Shock jock?
Well, I think so. Again, there's always a lot of controversy surrounding, you know, Howard's style. The reality is you can't deny he is immensely popular. He has a huge following, and he is a part of radio history. He's been nominated a couple of times to the Radio Hall of Fame. He's not been selected. Those that select people to the Radio Hall of Fame are the Hall of Fame members from all over the country, and anybody can join for $15. You can be a member of the Radio Hall of Fame. So it's nominated, but you know, will there be a day? His day may come, but it has not come as yet.
Mm-hmm.
What about somebody like Imus? I see Imus not on your list of radio.
No, actually, Imus is in the Radio Hall of Fame. He was inducted about 12 years ago.
Huh.
That's another thing, by the way. We've been mentioning the museum.tv site, which is our core site.
Right.
You can also link off that site to our Radio Hall of Fame website.
Right, that's where I'm at right now. I do see him down there. He's down there with Larry King, and of course, which is Casey Kasem. All the guys you think should be up there.
So
now, one thing very important, if I can put a little plug in here, mm-hmm. that if you go to our radio, again, you can get to it through museum.tv. But if you want to go to the radio site specifically, that is radio, HOF. .org, HOF, like Hall of Fame.
Radio HOF.org. Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's very important. Obviously, the museum keeps going because of memberships and foundations and support from a variety of individuals. But wherever you're listening, if you would like to help the museum and support the Radio Hall of Fame, you can join the Radio Hall of Fame online for $15. And when it comes time to vote, we'll be sending out the ballots for this year in mid-May, you'll get a ballot.
Wow.
You'll be able to determine who is inducted. And also, if you go to that radio, HOF.org, there's a little radio quiz. If you play the quiz, you are automatically entered into a sweepstakes, and you and a guest can win trips to the Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Chicago on Saturday, November 8th.
Very impressive.
And you forgot the most important part, Bruce. No purchase necessary.
No purchase necessary.
and when you're in Chicago, of course,
we're prohibited by law.
Yeah, that's true. Member of the
that's United true. And make sure and mail before midnight tonight. Operators are standing by. The you know, you got to get an Italian beef sandwich too when you go there to Chicago to see the museum and get yourself a deep dish pizza.
That's for
Bruce,
sure.
Thanks for being with us today. It's the museum, the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's in Chicago. You can go online, look at it right now at museum.tv. Bruce Dumont here on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. This is the Advertising Show. This segment is being brought to you by our friends at Charles P. Young. We'll be back in just a minute.
All right, now let's see if we can find first. No, that's not it. Believe me, it's in there somewhere.
No matter how rough you treat a rebel, it's awfully hard to hurt it.
There's a good example of a television commercial that translates very easily and effectively with sound effects, and it gives you a good visual to radio.
Mm-hmm.
American Motors, the AMC Rebel.
Yeah.
I don't think there are any more of those around Anywhere.
Precursor to the Rambler.
Not even at the Rambler Museum, probably.
Or followed the Rambler, yeah. You know, they thought they were so smart. We got to change the name of the Rambler and make it an AMC vehicle, and they went right in the toilet, didn't they?
Oh, I remember those two. I was in Detroit at the time, and it was like, oh, what did you guys build?
You know, it's funny. We were talking about this the other day in my regular business work week about Datsun.
You mean it's Sonic?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want a hot apple pie with that? Datsun, as you may recall, was when they decided to change that name to Nissan, it was like, have you lost your mind? Now, very good example. You say Datsun, it's like, that sounds weird.
Weird, I know.
Why would you have ever had that name?
And the Datsun Z was the car.
Exactly.
Back then.
But Nissan sounded so strange.
Nissan is much better. And they brought back the Z, which is really, really cool.
This year, apparently it's doing well.
By the way, I saw a new, this is not the car show, by the way. I saw a new Cabrio.
Click.
A new Cabrio, a convertible Cabrio.
Uh-huh.
Cool car. Really cool car.
You know, a convertible in Houston on a day like today.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know, satellite radio company XM is going to be launching an ad agency review, which is rather interesting. I don't know if you've been reading about this. They're based out of D.C., and they spent about $55 million last year, so it's a decent account. Apparently, TBWA Shy Day out of Playa del Rey, California, is the incumbent, but sources say they're not going to defend. In other words, that's code for to hell with you. The agency created work for XM that you may recall. It was it starred such folks as B.B. King, David Bowie, and and Snoop Doggy Dogg. Anyway, Shiat won the account in June of 2000. What's interesting about this news item is they've hired a company, Pyle & Company, out of Boston to handle the process of the agency review. What happened to the days when an agency a client handled their own review? Now you got to hire a company to do that.
Company to do the review. That's pretty good. Yeah. How much does that cost?
Well, it's just another consulting fee. Another consulting fee.
Here's a cool concept that could be done in your neck of the woods if you wanted to. There is a master plan community now that has its own. It's experimenting with a unique type of radio infomercial station to promote the residential community. Using a series of commercials, this one happens to be at 1640 a.m., this planned community takes the people who are part of this take turns at giving their take on the development in a 30-second talk radio-style spots. A marketing tool was developed in an effort to allow the residents and prospective buyers to tune in and get the scoop on the new master plan community. Huh. You know, it's kind of like when you get close to the airport and it says tune to 1640 or tune to one of those high bands on the AM.
Have you ever done that?
No.
I have, and it's like, well, where are they? And I'm flying anyway, so what do I care about the traffic?
But this is a cool concept.
It is a good idea.
Putting it on AM is not necessarily the best concept, but, what are you going to get on the FM band? And, well, there's a lot of low-power FMs, I suppose, out there, but still, it's like probably a 10-watt,
low power.
Stick.
Right.
And you can pick it up. Pick it up just right around the community. So that's another opportunity for marketing your community.
What do you think of all these celebrities that are coming out talking about, you know, I'm a big believer in First Amendment freedoms, obviously.
No.
But what about all these celebrities coming out and voicing their opinion about the war?
I don't think that they need to be doing that. I really don't.
I don't think they do as well. Not that they're not, you know, deserving of speaking their opinion, but they're really leveraging their celebrity. If you wanted to go out and talk about it, who would cover that, Ray?
Right.
Except for the 2 hours today.
Exactly.
But apparently Martin Sheen's little bit of politicking is getting this guy in trouble.
That's not bad.
I'm kind of glad to hear about this. In the New York Post online edition earlier this week, they reported that Martin Sheen and his son Charlie, you may recall, starred in a spot for Visa Check Card. And it was cited as one of the top TV commercials.
Oh, it's a great TV spot.
2002, yeah. Very, very good spot. Well, apparently last week they canceled the spot. And I think, insiders say that Sheen's anti-Bush bashing is the reason. And Visa has been getting tons of complaints based on his war stance, according to one particular spokesperson. Visa was running the Sheen ads with the Yao Ming ads, as you may recall.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And apparently Ming is still running. And
Which is a good ad. But that's too bad because that Sheen ad was a great ad.
It's a great ad, but, I mean, it goes to show you. Did you see on today's, in our local market here in Houston, that today's Chronicle, I'm sure it's picked up worldwide, apparently the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, yeah, Natalie Maines, is that her name?
Yeah, Maines? Exactly, Maines.
I think that's what it is.
If you haven't read this already, apparently they were in Europe, and she basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that she's embarrassed to be from Texas, and that George Bush, being a fellow Texan, is like, you know, making a huge mistake and blah, blah, blah. And what's happened is all these country and Western stations across America have pulled their music.
Dixie Chicks. I'm not surprised, because is there anybody more passionate than a country and Western listener? You know,
That's exactly right.
And that's a stupid thing to do.
Well, you've got Sheen here, you know, losing some, you know, not that he's poor, but, you know, he's losing probably, you know, millions, obviously, he and his son, for being pulled on the visa campaign. Dixie Chicks, it will be interesting to see, Ray, if this is a not just a temporary thing, but I mean, if they flame out, if they flame out and go down, it will be an interesting little something to watch over the next several months.
Film at 11.
Yeah, and apparently that the middle one of the three.
Right. Which one was that?
The one always is in the middle.
Well, that would be Natalie.
That's the one we're talking about.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, depending upon where they stand, you know.
Yeah, she always bugged me anyway. I don't know about you.
Oh, I like her.
Like her too, but she bugs me.
She was on an episode of Trading Spaces, which is a really hot home improvement show on the Learning Channel.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's big stuff. Big stuff. So,
the Learning Channel from the Dixie Chicks. Can you imagine?
Yes. No. You've not heard of that show, huh?
Not.
Trading Spaces, big.
Oh, well, yeah. It's about the home. Yeah. Somebody comes in. They say, let me fix up your.
Right. They trade homes for 24 hours. Right.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool show. I totally agree with that. And I think that was a big, big, big mistake on her part to do something like that. You know, just because you can sing and entertain people does not mean that you can use that that fame and that elevation of awareness to go ahead and trash the president and or our country.
Right.
Wrong idea.
I agree.
Natalie, bad girl.
Bad girl.
Here's something. This is the old fart set. Keith Hilmer says advertising industry ignores the lucrative 50-plus set. See, you're not there yet, but I am.
No, I'm not.
But a new agency, but can a new agency for boomers buck the cult of youth? Here's a kind of an ad you don't see every day. It's a Sony commercial. Have you seen this Sony commercial? It aired during the Super Bowl. It opens with a shot of a man who's clearly in his late 50s or 60s, relaxing by a lake, learning Russian on a Sony audio device. He's then shown packing his bags, so on and so forth. He finally gets fired into space. Carry On, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, which is definitely of my generation. And then the tagline is, when your kids ask where the money went, show them the tape. What a great ad.
It is a great spot, and it's interesting. My wife's in her early 40s, and she mentioned the other day that she feels old because she was listening to oldies the other day, and they had one of her favorite songs from high school on, which was Elton John. And I said, Laura, you need to look at the calendar. You're part of the oldies target. I'm sorry.
And you know what's funny, going back to a couple of decades ago in radio, the 35-plus set was a throwaway. It's like, we don't want any of that kind of stuff. Right. So all these stations are trying to, you know, get younger than 35. And, boy, has that changed.
Follow the money and follow the people, and you'll see the boomers represent some huge bucks to be targeted for today.
That's some good advice on the advertising show. It's being brought to you by Roadshow Media, our new media partner for web hosting and web streaming. The Houston Business Journal, strictly Houston, strictly business in there, too, with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. On the advertising show, we stream live at theadvertisingshow.com. Here in Houston, it's CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Advertising Show, America's only weekly radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, sales, and customer relations. Once again, your hosts, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
And The Advertising Show is being brought to you by the Houston Business Journal, strictly Houston, strictly business, and by Roadshow Media. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.
We've got Jeff Gittimer going to join us. We've got Andy Borowitz on the way, too, on the advertising show. And today and in the future, we will probably not be playing any Dixie Chicks music on the advertising show.
Right.
Okay? Won't be doing that because we don't play any music. We just talk more.
Do we give her the request line out?
I don't know what the request. You mean?
No, I'm just... Hey, Ray, have you been hearing about this? You know, I don't know about you, but I'm pissed off at the French.
Are you?
Hell yes.
You and a few of other people.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we've got this thing now where French fries are being called freedom fries.
Right.
Well, I jotted down a few notes this week, and because I think a lot of people are overlooking some things here.
Yes.
We're going to have to start working on some new names.
Yes.
French vanilla ice cream.
Oh.
What are we going to do there? How about men's French cuff shirts? And, of course, the all-favorite French kiss. What are we going to do with that?
I don't know.
We're going to have to change these names. We have French-cut green beans. No more.
French toast.
French toast.
Yeah.
French-cut swimsuits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
A French manicure?
French manicure, French windows, and no more French dressing. Go with blue cheese. You know. And by the way, can you see these kids right now, fourth, fifth graders, thinking about joining the band?
Yeah.
You can't believe you're playing the French horn.
Well, this could be a problem, couldn't it?
How about the French pastry? And, the Madeleine Bakery, French Bakery, yeah.
Well, what about Hotel Sofitel? Did you see what they're doing? They actually took down their French flag and put up the American flag. They're also putting up the state flags as well.
I've heard that, and Leno said this earlier in the week, he had Bill O'Reilly on, and O'Reilly and others are going to call for a boycott of French-based companies. And I think Leno made a good point, and that is, for example, Motel 6 is French-owned.
And so is Red Roof Inn.
Exactly. And
by Hotel Sofitel.
Exactly. And the problem is that if you call for a boycott on that, Americans who own franchises of Motel 6s and... franchisees, they would be. They own franchises.
Right, right.
Yes. They're going to end up going out of business, and they have nothing to do with it. So you're putting an American out of business, and what are they going to do? They're going to go find another franchisee, and it'll be another American. And so you got to figure out if you want to hurt the French, figure out how to deal with companies that are based in France and that are French-managed over here in America and not by... So I guess what are we talking about? Air France would be an example.
Right.
And, of course,
Odette.
And French, make sure and not get any more French manicures, Ray.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, I stopped those a while back. Getting pricey. How about Tom Baudet?
That's true.
He'll leave the light on for you, but nobody's going to show up, or maybe somebody will.
You know, any women out there that have the French twist hairstyle,
oh, geez,
forget it.
Here we go.
Yeah.
French bread. What are we going to do?
Eat
sourdough bread. It's better for you anyway.
Well, just go to your bakery and say, I want one of those long, thin kind of bread that used to be from France.
Yeah.
You know, every week we try to feature something from the Tonight Show Jay Leno, headlines, which he does every Monday. And here's an ad for it's a car maintenance ad, and it says free oil change. We're continuing here.
For Chrysler Dodge owners, with the purchase of any scheduled maintenance.
So if you purchase scheduled maintenance...
You get free oil?
Why would you need a free oil change if you purchased a scheduled maintenance program?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that include?
It ought to, yeah.
Anyway, folks, you gotta think this stuff through when you... Yeah, I've got one here. I think you'll like this. This is kind of an interesting one, Ray. Now, this right here is an ad, as you can see, and the ad is for eating healthy. And it's a brand product. And what is it called?
Bran wafers.
No, Bowel Buddy.
Bowel Buddy. Yeah, I see.
Bowel Buddy brand wafers.
Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't pick that up, though. That's very interesting. And there's a definitely an E there that shouldn't be there.
I would say if you can get your product and you can capture what it does in the name, as you do here with Bowel Buddy.
They certainly have that USP down, don't they?
They really
do. Get right to the point.
They really do. You know, we could comment on this, but I think we better leave the lower digestive tract jokes for later.
That would be fine.
Yeah.
No problem.
You're the one that said old fart last hour.
I did, didn't I?
Is that a new demographic term?
I think it's been around for a while.
How about this? Free
pizza.
Buy a 14-inch pizza.
And receive a second
one-inch
for free.
Can you imagine?
I'll have the one-inch pizza.
This is called proof your ads, folks.
Really gets the term pepperoni and mushroom.
Well, actually,
I'll take one pepperoni and one mushroom.
If you have a dog, if you have a dog and you go home, you say, okay, give the dog the 1 inch and we'll eat the 14.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway.
That's funny.
Jay Leno headlines, you can get them at NBC.com at the Tonight Show.
That's website. Where we stole them from, so
yeah.
You go get them too, okay?
It's called Public Domain.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillings along with Brad Forsyth. We are coming up here with Andy Borowitz here in just a moment. TheAdvertisingShow.com is where you'll find us live online, streaming globally. And we join our special guest this hour here in just a minute, too, Bruce Dumont, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications out of Chicago. Stay with us.
If your wife won't let you buy a Volvo, let her drive one. That'll really do the job. Once she gets the feel of it, she might like knowing you're getting a car that, in most cases, lasts long enough to get people out of new car payments.
There you go, a Volvo spot from
payments,
years ago.
Or swimming pool.
The Advertising Show, Business Radio 650. CBS Infinity here in Houston, live online at theadvertisingshow.com as we stream live with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth. That's a cute spot. Basically, what it was is a lady trying to drive a stick shift Volvo. Make her get her automatic instead. Much better.
Reminds me of a driving lesson I gave to a former spouse.
I did the whole thing too with the girls. That was fun. And actually, they did pretty good. As a matter of fact, it was quite good. Now, Bruce, our executive producer, Bruce got a Z, right, and he hadn't driven a stick before.
You mean Z3? Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. And he. So that was, we gave him a driving lesson in that thing, too.
Why?
Now he drives real fast.
And where did he get his new transmission after learning?
No, he did that good. He was really good at what he was doing, so it was kind of cool. Our special guest is Bruce Dumont, who is founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, talking to us out of Chicago today. I want you to go online, too, if you get a chance, to the museum.tv, museum.tv. That's where you're going to find a whole bunch of cool stuff about radio and television, about the news. It's a really cool journey. And I kind of wish we were there right now. It'd be kind of fun to see what's cooking there.
And it's free, just like going to the museum. It's free.
Yes. Bruce, good to have you on the show today.
Nice to be back.
Bruce, in your literature, it mentions that you were armed with a huge ton of money, $250, many years ago.
Whoa.
Where you decided to embark upon forming the museum. What was your motivation behind embarking upon this undertaking?
Well, I was producing a local television show for the CBS-owned, called WBBM Television. And in the course of producing that program every day, I would see the way that they handled their 2-inch videotape, which was not very well. And the tapes would be piled up. Sometimes the piles would be falling all over. And I would look down and see historic days in Chicago TV history that literally nobody was looking at, nobody was taking any care of. I assumed that if that was going on at the CBS affiliate, it was a similar situation existed at NBC and ABC. And the independent station, I later found out that was true. And so I went to the Television Academy Board, where I was a member of the Board of Governors. They were looking for a way to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the chapter. I raised my hand and said, I think we need a broadcast museum in Chicago that can preserve these historic moments in Chicago television history. And they said, Dumont, you're a committee of one. Go ahead and work on it. A couple of weeks, actually a couple of months later, after some cab rides and some luncheons, they said they would give me $250 to sort of defray my expenses, and the museum was born, and I've never looked back.
And what year was that, Bruce?
That was the idea was in 1982, and the $250 came in early 1983.
And it says it founded in 87, so it took you, I guess, 4 years to get that idea off the ground, basically?
Yes, we began the conversation, and we were able to get a lot of, because of my background, I knew a lot of people in radio and television. They were able to help me get started, and the one area where I really didn't know a lot of people was in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine was the editor and publisher of Crane's Chicago Business. And his boss was Rance Crane, the publisher of Advertising Age.
Mm-hmm. We know him well.
So as he was kind to set up a lunch for me, and I went to see Rance and told him my story. He gave me a few names of people in advertising, because I understand that it was important to preserve the commercials as well as the programs.
Mm-hmm.
He understood that. And that very day, I went back to my offices at CBS in Chicago, and there was a phone call from the general manager of the ABC-owned station in Chicago. Two of the giants of ABC in Chicago, one who went on to the network, Frank Reynolds.
Sure.
Fahey Flynn, who was the dominating news anchor in Chicago for over 25 years. They had both died. They died within about 10 days of one another. And he was calling to tell me that in their name, he was going to make a $5,000 donation to the museum idea.
Wow.
At a memorial service coming up the following week. So I called my newfound friend of about 90 minutes, Rance Crane. He said, "That's terrific. I'll match it." And we went from no dollars to $10,000 in one day in late August of 1983. And we've been off and running since that time. And again, as I said, really never looked back from that point on.
Rance Crane, a former guest here on the Advertising Show, what a wonderful guy. He and his brother Keith, both the two fellas that their father founded the huge company now is Crane Communications, but started, I guess, with Advertising Age right there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the vision of Rance from that first meeting, but again, the tremendous commitment that his mother, the late Gertrude Crane, made.
Mm-hmm.
She made a monumental contribution and to help launch the museum several years later, and an integral part of the museum history is the Crane family, without question.
Well, your research center is called the A.C. Nielsen Jr. Research Center. I assume Nielsen has some kind of support to you, lending you for that?
Yes, Art Nielsen, who had just retired from the A.C. Nielsen Company.
Mm-hmm.
He retired at the end of 1983, and he was our first chairman. He joined the museum as its leader in January of 1984, and he is now our chairman emeritus, but has made substantial contributions over the evolution of the museum.
Anybody familiar with the name Nielsen should know, of course, the TV rating service. They since, I guess, sold that company to VNU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so which is, of course, a company up in the Netherlands. They, mm-hmm. I think it'd be easier to tell you what VNU doesn't own in the industry. I'll tell you,
as much as Clear Channel does.
Well, it's just a little different. Different slant on
you,
all.
You know,
that.
I noticed you had J.P. McCarthy in your Radio Hall of Fame. That's really great. I had a chance to do a stint at WJR back in the early 80s, I think it was. And talk about that. That was a broadcast museum there in itself. You got off in the Fisher Building on the whatever floor they're on, and they had microphones and awards and old radios and things. And the whole station was set up like radio was in the 1940s, 1950s. It was really kind of cool. Did you ever get a chance to head that way?
When we took over the Radio Hall of Fame in 1991, we acquired it from the Emerson Radio Corporation. The first thing we did is we wanted to legitimize the process of inducting people into the Radio Hall of Fame. And there had been no place for people who work in the local vineyards of radio. And I thought that was a major mistake,
right?
Because in every market there's a giant of an industry that stays in the market, owns the market, and I felt they too had to aspire to a national Radio Hall of Fame where the Jack Bennies and the Paul Harveys and the Bob Hopes and the Groucho Marx would also end up. And so J.P. McCarthy of Detroit was the very first local broadcaster ever inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame, and since that time we have nominated and inducted many of the greats. In fact, one of the great broadcasters in the state of Texas, Ron Chapman,
sure.
From Dallas,
is
one of the nominees this year, so mm-hmm. he could take his place along some other great broadcasters who have been phenomenal contributors to radio at the local level.
You've got Cousin Brucey, you've got Rick Sklar, who was big with WABC radio back in the 60s, 70s.
Your National Radio Hall of Fame, Bruce, how do you go about selecting nominees for that?
The process is selected. There's a national steering committee which reviews all recommendations. Anyone can make a recommendation to the steering committee. The steering committee gets together once a year and goes through every one of the recommendations that comes in. We make our final choices in four separate categories with four nominees in each category.
What are those categories?
That's made by the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And those categories are both at the national level and at the local and regional level.
Mm-hmm.
They deal with those who are veterans of the respective areas, and they also represent those that are still active, but yet who have been on the air for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it covers a lot of the bases. It covers all levels of radio, all markets of radio, and then once those nominations are announced, as is mentioned on our website, both the radio website and the museum website, all the nominees for this year are listed there, right on the front page of radiohof.org. Then the next thing is the ballots go out in May. They go out to everyone who's a member of the Museum or Radio Hall of Fame.
Let's take a break here for just a moment. We'll continue that process in just a moment, Bruce. Bruce DeMott is our special guest here on the Advertising Show, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce is talking to us in Chicago, out of Chicago today. You can find out more about the museum at museum.tv. What an appropriate tag onto that thing. The Advertising Show. This segment is being brought to you by the Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation. Ray Shillins, Brad Forsyth, on CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650.
Robert P. Soup Anderson, and here with me are the non-identical twins, Happy and Pee-wee.
Hiya,
soup fan.
Everywhere.
The gentlemen here are going to demonstrate how we split peas for our soup rather than crush them and lose the flavor.
Yes.
Notice the other intricate machinery, the
TV spot for a soup that may or may not be around these days, Anderson's Pea Soup. Anderson's Split Pea Soup.
Hmm.
And that's Bob and Ray, the famous radio guys.
Sure.
Out of L.A. with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show. And our special guest today is Bruce DeMott. Bruce is founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce is in Chicago as well as the museum, too. And you can find out more by going online at the museum. This is called museum.tv. Of course, the traditional three-dub museum.tv.
Yeah.
Bruce, it sure is great to have you on the show today. Thanks for being a part of the Advertising Show.
Well, I'm delighted to spend Saturday afternoon with you.
Well, I got to tell you, Bruce, Ray and I were both in Chicago last fall and had an opportunity to do a very quick in and out. I guess it was a two-day deal.
Right.
And I must tell you, I am very regretful of not making time to get by your museum. Because
yeah, it was either that or hit White Castle. And we...
Right.
Well, that gives you another reason to come back.
Well,
yeah,
it does, doesn't it?
You're exactly right, and we will do that. And before I get into talking about your radio show, I know you have a TV show there in Chicago as well. I want to wrap it up on the museum for just a second here. You mentioned the steering committee that you have. Any recognizable names that we would know on the committee? For you?
There would be Angel Harvey, Mrs. Paul Harvey is one. Dennis Green from the Westwood One radio network,
mm-hmm.
David Cantor, former president of AM/FM radio,
sure.
Marv Dyson from WGCI in Chicago, Stu Olds from Cats Radio, Erica Farber from Radio and Records, to name a few.
Very prestigious board you have there.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to your radio program that you have, that airs both here in Chicago at WLS, and certainly we're all familiar with that station. And I was noticing online you are very well represented in your local affiliates across America.
The closest to Houston is Austin,
KLBJ.
KLBJ.
Yes, we'd love to be on in Houston.
Well,
your program director.
We will definitely do that. Let's talk a little bit about Beyond the Beltway. What exactly is your program about? What do you cover?
Beyond the Beltway is a live two-hour national broadcast every Sunday night that gives people an opportunity to sound off and share their thoughts on some of the comments that have come out of Washington that morning. A lot of political junkies watch those Sunday morning shows religiously, Face the Nation, Meet the Press, This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
this gives the American people an opportunity to respond to that on Sunday night.
Huh.
It's from 6 to 8 Central Time. It's myself plus three people talking about whatever is in the news. These are real, live people, because it's my belief that not all the wisdom in America rests along the banks of the Potomac. There are a lot of smart people with strong ideas, good ideas, lots of passion, very articulate. They live beyond the Beltway. They think beyond the Beltway, and that's really the rock rib core of America. And again, we've noticed over the last several weeks that that is an America that is split on the impending war in Iraq. We have all sides represented. It's not my polemic on what I want. I'll stick my two cents in, but I will be there to defend what I say and also to challenge guests that are around the table, as well as those that call in on our 800 number.
You shoot that show right out of the Radio Museum?
Yes, the program is broadcast live from the Radio Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
We also videotape it as we do the show, and the first hour of our show every night becomes a local television show both in Chicago and San Francisco.
Huh.
And we also stream the show. We've been streaming the show both audio and video for about 3 years now.
And where does the TV program air there in Chicago?
It airs in several locations. It airs every Sunday night at 10:30 on one of the public television stations.
Uh-huh.
And then at midnight, it airs on a cable system. And then the next night and the following night, it airs on all the Comcast cable systems, both in the city and in the suburban and northern Illinois region.
What a great concept for your Beyond the Beltway show, wrapping up the day's events of the public affairs programming that had been on Sunday. I would feel that if I were you, that Wolf on CNN, who has now got a program called The Last Word, I'd feel a little ripped off, I think, because I know your program preceded his. How long have you had this program going?
Well, we've had the program. Actually, that's a little sore point because, although he says that he's the final word, we
yeah.
are the final word.
Right.
And the other reality is that, the title of our program, Beyond the Beltway, is a title that also that has been picked up and ripped off by CNN in the Capital Gang. They use a segment called Beyond the Beltway, and
okay.
our lawyers are pursuing that at the very moment, as you might suspect.
Well,
but Bruce is out on bail right now.
Yeah,
$1.5 million. That's good.
You know the
we registered that long ago.
Did you?
That was registered in 1994. So they CNN is in violation of our copyright.
Are you proceeding that with
yes,
litigation?
Are. Yes, we are.
The in the broadcast industry, it's no secret that people within the industry that are responsible for program development, where they get their ideas is usually from other people doing a great job. What they think is under the radar, certainly not the case with Beyond the Beltway. And I think it's pretty obvious that CNN must have gotten the idea for The Last Word from your program, since you are distributed throughout the U.S.
Well, believing it and proving it, as you know, are two separate things. But
right.
clearly, we have a registration number, and we're flattered that they use it. But the reality is that, and I think it's really core, because Beyond the Beltway is more than just the name of a radio and television show. It is my personal philosophy. It has been my personal philosophy since I first went on the radio in 1966.
So you came up with this idea just sitting around one day watching the news programs on Sunday and then listening to maybe talk radio on Monday and thinking there's a void there that needs to be filled?
No, I basically felt for a long time that there's too much attention to an official core group of people who travel from show to show. And I'm not just talking about the official, leaders of government, be they Republican or Democrat, that there's a core group of them that tend to be the frequent guests. But I'm also talking about the media, the alleged experts. Again, there are about 21 people
alleged
who really define American political thought, and they jump from show to show. And it isn't, by the way, I don't view this as just a left of center thing. It's conservatives as well. I mean, you'll see Tucker Carlson on three or four shows, and Fred Barnes, and Paul Gigot. I mean, the reality is
that small core group of people. They go to the same dinner parties. Their kids go to the same schools. They are insular in their thought. And every 2 or 4 years, they decide to get on a bus or a plane and come out and see what the rest of America is thinking.
Uh-huh.
To me, that's wrong. And Beyond the Beltway is every Sunday night. It's the antidote to that thinking.
Huh.
So yeah. You won't be having Charlie Sheen on your show. Is that what you're thinking, right?
No, I think not.
Natalie Maines, maybe her. She'd be good.
Maybe.
It'd be a nice debate, wouldn't it?
You know, I was reading somewhere where a very wealthy individual is trying to get behind launching a broadcast network to have liberal talk radio on the airwaves, trying to do what they claim is a balance of more conservative talk radio, which seems
don't to be... Don't they already have that?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Isn't it NPR?
It's NPR and it's Pacifica Radio, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been reading about this, too. And the big clamoring about this and the challenge, I guess, is that they claim that there's not enough of a balance to the Bill O'Reilly's on Westwood and Premier's Rush Limbaugh, et cetera. But yet they also claim that liberal talk radio has been tried before, and it frankly just doesn't have the appeal. What do you think about that, Bruce?
Well, I think they're right. I think the liberals, I think, take themselves too seriously, and part of what talk radio has to be is entertainment. I think you have to believe in what you're saying. I know early in the history of Beyond the Beltway, there were those that came to me, and given the nature of our show, they asked if I would, take a real sort of hard leftward edge, and that there might be some marketing dollars out there to promote it and launch such a show. It was obviously, around the time that Rush was really taking off, in the 92 presidential campaign. And frankly, I just, I said no. I said, I am who I am. I spent 20 years as a reporter and broadcast journalist in Chicago. I believe in presenting both sides. You'll know where I stand if you get to an issue that really I get exercised about. I'm going to give my opinion, but I do believe that the airwaves belong to the people, and I do believe that you have to present both sides. At least that's what I believe,
uh-huh.
And I think it makes Beyond the Beltway one of the most unique shows on American radio.
Well, one final question. As president and founder of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, Bruce, you're the ideal person to ask this question. Is there such a show as the advertising show anywhere else in America, and have you heard of such a show as we do here?
No, I have not, and I think it's an excellent idea, because I think commercials and advertising is something that not only affects our life, but it clearly is something that I think people talk about. I would say that next to maybe sex, advertising is probably one of the prime water cooler conversation topics all over the United States. Each and every day, people will talk about what they saw on TV last night, and more often than not, I think they're talking about commercials. I don't think the fascination with commercials is exclusive to the Super Bowl. I think people are talking about it all the time.
Well, you just reminded Ray and I what we've been missing out for the last 17 months.
Yeah. Talk about advertising.
Sex at the water cooler.
That's right.
Bruce, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll be back with you in Chicago one day soon.
Thank you very much. And again, you're invited to come and do the show live from the Radio Hall of Fame.
We'll take you up on that.
Thanks, Bruce. It's the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and we've been talking to Bruce Dumont, who is founder and president. It's in Chicago. You can go online right now if you want to find out more at museum.tv, and of course, find out more about Bruce's radio show at beyondthebeltway.com. The advertising show is with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and this segment is being brought to you by WB39 Television. Glad you could join us today. Streaming live online at theadvertisingshow.com. And here in Houston on CBS Infinity's Business Radio 650.
Our first home-cooked meal. I'm glad you liked it, dear.
I'll say. Honey, I've never seen a dumpling that big.
Well, I considered making a lot of little ones, but I wanted to impress you with something that would really stick to your ribs.
They're newlyweds. She cooked dinner. He needs Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah.
Burp. Hey, speaking of spicy stuff and dumplings and all that kind of good stuff, on February 26th, Roy Grace passed away.
And you would say, well, that's good. Like,
you're kidding.
Who the heck is Roy Grace?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay, well,
yeah.
Do you remember the television show, or not the television show, the TV commercial? It's a spicy, spicy meatball.
Oh, sure.
Or do you remember the gorilla throwing the American Tourister luggage around? That's Roy Grace.
No kidding.
And also the funeral TV spot for Volkswagen. That's Roy Grace.
Oh, sure.
So he passed away of prostate cancer on the 26th of February.
I'm sorry.
During his years at Doyle Dane Birnbach, Mr. Grace was a member of the 1960s All-Star Creative Team. Like we said, his work included the Volkswagen, the Gorilla, the Alka-Seltzer thing, too, the spicy meatball at Miles Laboratory. And Mr. Grace left DBD with colleague Diane Rothschild. Founded Grace and Rothschild in 1987. He returned to auto advertising, beginning a relationship with Range Rover and later Land Rover that ended after 13 years in the year 2000. So he's going to be missed in the ad community. There's a lot of tributes this week to Roy Grace.
Interesting. When you first started describing that, I thought you meant the voice talent on camera, but you mean the creator behind all that.
No, that's the guy. That's the guy.
Well, it's all classic stuff, and I guess a sign of creativity is the long-lasting ability for something like that to be remembered by us consumers, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ray, I don't know about you, but, you know, this is no laughing matter. And you're thinking, where's he going with this? Sources said AOL Time Warner and Viacom have agreed to talk about the possible sale of jointly owned Comedy Central.
Really?
Yeah, apparently either Viacom may purchase or a third party, but neither company are commenting on the fact that it is on the block. AOL is still assessing the network's value. What would you think a cable network like that would be worth?
Oh, God, it's hard to say now. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, some analysts say that it's worth $1.6 billion.
Billion.
Others say $2 billion. And I think the deal is there, you know, what, 10 years ago, you could create a cable channel and they'd, you know, had space for you. Today, there's no room left.
Right.
And so you have the brand Comedy Central, which I think is a great brand.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have certainly the allocation of the cable network itself that has huge value, and you know, so anyway, we'll see what happens. Interesting.
We've got Roger Dodson coming up next week on the Advertising Show. Roger is a senior vice president of the Radio Advertising Bureau. This is an incredibly cool organization that really provides a bunch of tools for radio stations to do their job properly. That is to allocate the right media dollars where they should be, not just based on hype, which sometimes happens.
You know,
we'll look forward to Roger.
Roger's such a great guy. You and I had a chance to meet him in person, gosh, a little less than a year ago.
Right.
And he is, you know, he was our very first guest in October of 2001. And he's the kind of guest that you ask him one question, London, and then you just go out and get your dry cleaning.
Uh-huh.
And he just keeps talking, and then you do the commercials, and then we'll come back, maybe, or we'll just cue up our voice, what they call voice tracking today.
Yeah, usually what Brad and I do is pop open a good Merlot and some cheese and things like this. Just sit back and let Roger talk.
Exactly.
You know, it works good.
And so anyway, it'll be a great show, and he is always a great guest.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Online traffic is something that was like, okay, I'm getting hits. Who's hitting me? But the monitoring rivals Nielsen Net Ratings and Comscore Media Metrics this past week introduced tools for comprehensive daypart analysis, which is really good because if you're going to get into the online marketing type stuff, you might as well know exactly what's going on.
It'll be interesting to see. I would imagine. What do you think, Ray? We have drive time and radio, which is the peak times. I would imagine it would be what, 7 to midnight or 7 to 10 would be peak times on online.
Well, no, I think online is a big challenge to radio stations who used to hold the 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. day part. In other words, a lot of people can listen online to radio stations now and also can get hit with ads. So, and they say that a lot of folks, a lot of these products that are marketed are online, and there are people in offices and everything. So,
I think what you'll find is the day parts, when they begin to look at them, you'll see that the 7 to 10 time is a huge traffic,
sure,
but
absolutely.
Yet it's probably the younger people, and then business people and the like are throughout the day. So it'll be interesting to see stats on that.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of the NBC sitcom Friends, well, apparently $1 million an episode is not quite enough money for friend star Matthew Perry, because he's going to be, of course, he's known as Chandler, as we all know. He's going to soon be doing a little bit of moonlighting on NBC. He's going to go over and do two episodes on The West Wing, speaking of Charlie Sheen, of Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
Apparently, Perry will play Joe Quincy, a Republican attorney who attempts to land a job as a White House associate counsel, and the episodes are scheduled to air April 23rd and April 30th. So set your recorder, London.
And check your local listings.
For a show near you.
Hey, there's something going on in hospitals now. The hospitals have their own television network. It's an advocacy, actually what it is, it's called the In-Hospital TV Network. And there's an advocacy group that is calling for the patient channel to be cut off, because what they're saying is these people who are sitting in a hospital bed watching this, they're being unfairly solicited for this stuff. But they say it was designed to give them access to a captive audience at a time of maximum vulnerability and emotional distress. That sounds like they're taking advantage of them a little bit, too.
A lot of pharmaceutical ads, probably.
Yeah, here's the thing. Do you think that is such a bad deal? I don't think that's such a bad deal.
It's is it like they don't have an option? I mean, is it either that network or none? I want to encourage everyone out there listening to us today, Ray. No more French kissing. We're against that because of the French.
Okay, that's fine.
So no more sloppy tongue action for you, Ray.
Jeez, oh man.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, no more French dressing as well.
I never liked French dressing to begin with either.
I didn't either.
And go for something a little bit better than that. Next week, as we just said, Roger Dodson will be with us on the Advertising Show. Roger is the Senior Vice President of the Radio Advertising Bureau. If you want to do your homework throughout the week, you can go visit the Radio Advertising Bureau and find out more about Roger. But he's always a fun guest, and it'll be good to talk to him. Thanks again to Bruce Dumont, founder and president of the Museum of Broadcast Communications out of Chicago. Museum.tv is his website, and you can find out more about that museum. Actually become a member, too.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to be in the Chicago area, you can actually go visit it and see a lot of cool stuff there, too. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Roadshow Media, our brand new streaming and hosting partner, and we thank them for all the great work that they do. And the Houston Business Journal, Strictly Houston, Strictly Business. It's a big Radio Midgets production.